This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, The Devil in the Details, Lucifer in Modern Speculative Fiction.
So this is a bit of a risque topic.
Potentially.
Because we're going to be talking about Lucifer, obviously. Now, Lucifer's kind of actually appeared in all sorts of fiction over the years. I've got to be careful what I say here, because I was about to say, like the Bible. I'm not going to be taking sort of shots at religion of any kinds. We're literally just going to be talking about how Lucifer has appeared in speculative fiction in comparison to how he appeared in the Bible, and how over time we've seen Lucifer transform from being the villain to an almost anti-hero. So you take it away, Jules. You start. No pressure.
No, that's fine. If we're going as back as far as the Bible, let's remember that it was really only written down probably around 2,000 years ago, slightly less than that. And actually, that's very, very recent. Before that, it was a collection of oral tales. They have proved that there is a line of accuracy in oral tales as well. So not to throw completely everything out, but you do have to remember that the context has changed over the last 8,000 years, if
just
not longer. Now, looking at the Old Testament, the devil isn't the devil. The devil's never referred to as the devil. In fact, I'm not sure he's referred to as the devil in the entire Bible, New Testament, Old Testament, or the Book of Mormon.
Not even in the Book of Mormon?
Don't think so. Possibly, maybe not. That's the one I haven't read. Anyway, he's referred to as the adversary. Or you could say there are parallels with the snake in the garden. But the snake in the garden was also considered to be Lilith, or Lilitu, the mother of all demons, who actually was Adam, of Adam and Eve fame, was Adam's first wife.
Yep.
And there's an interesting version of that original creation myth, whereby basically Lilith will not be submissive to Adam, i.e. she will not lie on her back for procreation purposes.
No missionary position for you, Adam.
She wanted to go on top. There was a bit more to it than that, but basically that was very symbolic of she will not submit to man. So the first wife got discarded, and that's how she became the mother of all demons. Now, it might just be a case of really, really annoyed first wives club syndrome. Or it might just be a case of, well, she still exists, and we don't know what to do with her, so let's put her over here. And she can, all the creatures she gives birth to and looks after and which become her subjects are actually demons, because we don't know what else to call them. Whereas Eve, who seems to, you'll notice, be a much more two-dimensional character.
Funny how that works.
Is willing to be the submissive party. Now, obviously, a lot of this is a very fabulous sort of creation myth that, and by fabulous, I don't mean, wow, it's glittery. I mean literally something out of a fable, whereby there are probably nuggets of truth here. And no doubt Jung and Sigmund Freud would have a field day with this particular myth. The first suggestion is in Genesis as the snake. But the snake is actually supposed to be the female first wife, Lilith. And one could argue with that knowledge that she was saying, yeah, you know that tree you're not supposed to eat the fruit of? You know, the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, which actually allows you to make informed choices? You should really have some of that. It doesn't matter what you've been told. I think you should be self-directing, make your own choices. You could argue that it was an attempt to help.
Yeah. And the thing about Lilith is I've always been very interested about Lilith. I remember the first moment I discovered her and I was just so totally kind of wow, because she was just sort of barred out and you only ever had Eve. And Lilith, in some versions as well, some version of the story, Lilith basically says, well, I don't want to be with you, Adam, to Adam. And she asks God if she can leave the Garden of Eden, and he says, yeah, sure. So she does, and she meets Lucifer, who was cast down. And we'll talk about the casting down bit in a second. But Lucifer was walking around, because there were a few angels walking around the earth at this point. And they meet and they fall in love, and so she's the mother of demons, because and Lucifer is the father. So Lilith is married to Lucifer, and I think that's another connection, which if she is the serpent at the beginning, she is also that's why it connects to Lucifer, in that they were married.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting part. All these bits are apocryphal. They don't actually form books in the Bible. During the 10th century, Emperor. It wasn't the 10th century. What am I talking
I don't know.
about? Around 1000 BC, Emperor Constantine said, "Yes, I think we'll have this thing called Christianity. We'll all convert en masse, and let's have a look at the Bible, and we'll have these books and not those books, and this bit of the gospel and not that bit."
Sounds good.
And
Sounds fair. If I like this bit, we'll have this bit.
a cynical person might say he chose the bits that propped up the areas of power he wanted to exploit.
What? No, Jules, that can't be right.
And in no way has any, or all, or some churches ever since then rewritten to suit themselves. Again, make up your own mind. But you can read the Apocrypha, you can get a copy of the Bible with the Apocrypha, you can also get yourself a copy of the Nag Hammadi texts as well as they've been, transcribed, translated, and the Dead Sea Scrolls. And that's where the interesting stuff, in my opinion, is, because you get the story of the casting out of the rebel angels, and you get the story of the giants that lived on Earth before the humans did, and the story of the rebel angels and some of the other angels actually taking human wives, the Nilfheim they were called.
Yeah.
That's what gave birth to the race of giants, actually. Sorry, I've got that the wrong way around. But this is all really, really interesting stuff as far as I'm concerned. So it's like,
But
why did you take that out?
I see, the thing is, I think that actually it's this new interest, because obviously religion doesn't govern us in the Western world in the same way that it used to. We no longer have people burnt at the stake for stuff, much. So it doesn't govern us in the same way that it used to. So I think people have started to take more of an interest in these texts, and they've started to look back. And as women are also become more self-empowered, we look back at the things that were considered evil in the Bible, and we start to not rewrite it, but we start to reanalyze it. So the devil now becomes a slightly more sympathetic character, because he's all about liberation. He's all about self-knowledge and self-empowerment, and maybe doing things which aren't, I'm not going to say morally right, but which aren't proper in the respect, take off all your clothes and go dancing in the street. But it's about liberation, and it's about the moderation between these two things. So we see characters like that. And I think a fine example of that is the TV series Lucifer, which has just come out. The second season's about to start, I think. Hopefully. I hope so, because I'm really enjoying it. And that is based on Neil Gaiman's Lucifer from Sandman. Now, you've read Sandman, I've read Lucifer, so, I've watched Lucifer, so I think between the two of us, we can talk a little bit about that Lucifer and why he is so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he comes across as actually what I read him in the Bible as being. In the Old Testament, I read him as a kind of trickster character, and
Yeah.
that's how he comes to, I mean, he's called the adversary the whole time. He's never really given a name. And we have to remember things like Satan comes from the Persian god of destruction, Shaitan,
Yeah, and
and
hell comes from the Norse.
Norse goddess,
Yeah.
Hel. And Lucifer comes from Lucifera, which was the Celtic pagan goddess of the spring, the light bearer. So really, name wise, we don't actually know.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't something that was included. You I mean you could read the whole thing as it as the devil being kind of a personification of a person's id if you wanted to, and it certainly reads more like that in the New Testament. But away from that tangent, as fascinating as it is, yeah, in the Sandman's an extremely sinister character, but it's not just, he doesn't just bring you good dreams. It's a very, very demon-esque and creepy. But Lucifer, to me, in those books, reads as, quite a sort of trickster character. Not necessarily good, but not necessarily evil either.
Yeah, and the way they do him in the series is quite interesting. You know, he's a very liberal person. He's all about having fun, and you know, but his biggest aspect is that he punishes people who do wrong, and in that respect, he's an incredibly just person, because he wants he believes in this kind of justice, even though he's pretending he doesn't, and there's this misinterpretation. And one of his real things is he gets annoyed when people say the devil made me do it, because he said, "I've never made anybody do anything. All I'm in charge of is tempting you sometimes and punishing you, but he's never made anybody do anything." And he points out that humans are really the horrible ones, because they're the ones who do all of these things and then blame it on the devil. And he says, "It's nothing to do with me, guys. It's all on you."
Which, unfortunately, it does take us back to the Bible, but I promise I'll be brief. It takes us back to the book of Job, which I read, I think I was 9. I literally read the Bible from
You
cover to
didn't mess
cover.
around, did you?
No. And I read the entire thing, the adult version, not the children's Bible, and I read it from cover to cover because I thought if I just get it done, then nobody's going to ask me to read this again. Which was a great theory, but obviously it didn't work out that way. But I quite liked the Book of Job, even though it's utterly horrible. Job is a really good, God-fearing man. He has a family who he loves. He has good crops. He's got a certain amount of wealth, but not too much. He does good things. He helps his neighbours. All the things that you're supposed to do that actually you don't get told to do until you read the New Testament. So he was thousands of years before his time in that respect.
Well
And
done, Joe.
this is one of the few direct references to the devil, known as the adversary, in the Bible, whereby the devil basically asks God to show him, or Yahweh to show him, one good man, and God says there, points at Job. Now, I'm assuming it's a metaphorical pointing, otherwise he probably would have flattened him with his finger.
That guy, oh
That
dear.
guy, oh, oops, yeah. And the devil said, well, that's all right, but look what you've given him. You've given him the way to make his way in the world. You've given him health. You've given him a certain amount of wealth. He has a great family. Of course, it's easy for him to do good. So God and the devil make a little wager. And the devil says, take all that away from him, and I guarantee he will not be a good man. And God says, all right, then you're on. Now, I've got no idea what the stakes were on this. But God does it. He systematically removes it. First of all, he sends years of famine and takes away the wealth. So they can't afford to help other people very much. They can't afford to feed themselves. He sends disease, gradually takes away every single member of Job's family, until Job is left alone. And then God curses Job with a plague of boils and also with other diseases. So he's extremely ill.
Thanks, God.
And Job kind of is sat there all the way through all these trials. It's kind of been like, okay, well, we must have faith in God that good times will come again, etc., etc. And apparently the devil's getting quite annoyed by this. Probably because Job sounds a little bit sanctimonious, if I'm quite honest.
Yeah.
And then it gets to the point where Job has literally had everything taken away from him, and Job turns around and says, I will still do good, but I don't want anything to do with you anymore. So curses God and said, I've always done what you've asked me. Why have you done this to me? And God sort of goes, ah, to prove that there is such a thing as a good man. Weirdly, the story is sort of cut off of there, so you don't really get
Because
Job's
Job tells him
response.
to go and
Yeah,
himself.
do one. it's sort of cut off, and I don't know. There's some weird rewriting going on where God brings everybody back to life and everything gets restored. I think that was just sort of slipped into later editions. I don't think that actually happened. And I'm really not sure what moral they want us to take away from the story, other than you should do good, or you should behave decently for the sake of being decent, not for any particular reward. It never says who actually won that wager either, because the devil claims he won, because at the very end, Job is not still worshipping God. He's sort of a bit annoyed. And God claims he won because Job hasn't actually gone out and become a mass murderer or anything.
Yeah, he can't really, considering the fact, he's dying of all these illnesses that God sent him that way.
So Why I find that story so fascinating, I don't know, but it was one of my favourite ones as a child. So I think it just reinforces the fact that I clearly like somebody to suffer if I'm reading.
Oh dear, Jules. But yeah, it is an interesting one, and we mentioned before the fall. And you know, there's lots of we go back way, way, way back to the stories of why Lucifer, when he, you know, I when a character of Lucifer was identified, why he fell. And the story goes that he fell because God said that you must love man above all else, including me. And Lucifer went, no, look at it. Look at that, pointed down at man. I can't love that more than I love you. And God said, well, I'm going to cast you down. Now, here's the interesting thing, because we're going to talk about hell. Hell did not exist until the medieval era. Hell was not a thing. So when Lucifer was cast down, what it actually means was that he was cast down to earth. And I genuinely think that the premise of that story, before all the context was lost, was that he was cast down to earth to spend time among the humans to learn what they were about. And as it turns out, he met a human, fell in love with her, and, you know, had lots of little demon babies. So good on you, Lucifer.
Although an alternate translation say that he was cast into the great pit, which was below the level of man,
Oh.
where he was imprisoned. He was cast down by Michael. Michael was extremely jealous of Lucifer because Lucifer was the most loved and adored by God of all the archangels. And Michael marked him with a fiery sword and broke his wings and threw him down into the pit.
I never trust Michael.
At God's behest. No, you can't trust anybody who has the title of, the destroyer, the one who keeps down evil. I'm sorry, you just can't. If the destroyer comes after the name, it doesn't matter how good they're supposed to be.
Yeah, the destroyer. Lord Almighty.
But where we get the patron saint, Saint Michael, he's the patron saint of power against evil, effectively. Where we get that from is obviously the Archangel Michael, who was in charge of making sure that nobody got out of the pit, as it were. And there's stories that say that the whole demonic beings were sort of experiments, if you like, that had gone wrong during creation and were already there.
Whoops.
Pre-made kingdom. Now, some of this has all got mixed up with, obviously, Dante's Inferno, and it's also got mixed up with Milton's Paradise Lost. Paradise Lost, in a way, is a bit more of an approachable version, in my opinion.
Okay, talk to us about Paradise Lost.
Paradise Lost talks about, Genesis, the creation. It also talks about the argument between God and Lucifer at the beginning and the casting down by Michael, which I think is probably rather embellished, but since it's quite entertaining, I'm willing to let Milton get by on that one.
All right, Milton, you get away with it this time.
And it starts off, interestingly enough, with Lucifer clearly being the bad guy. And then as you get further and further into the story, you can feel Milton warming up to this character and really putting his sympathy with the devil. It's extremely funny. Although an aspect you have to remember is that Milton did not physically write a lot of that poem down himself. He was almost totally blind at the time, and his poem, one of the most famous poems of all time, Paradise Lost, was actually transcribed by his three daughters, who were
So
well
maybe they
educated.
were the ones who.
So you don't know. The youngest one, Deborah, was the one who did the most of the transcription, and it may be that she was the one who couldn't help inserting a bit of sympathy here and there. Because if you imagine how difficult it is to dictate something as you're actually writing it in your head,
Yeah.
without being able to see it on a page because you can't see anymore. So that's an interesting aspect. Some of it may have come from Milton, some of it may have come from his daughters.
So why are women more sympathetic to Lucifer, do you think?
Why are they more sympathetic to the devil, or why is the devil more sympathetic to them?
Both. Answer all my questions, Jules.
Answer all your questions. I think my theory would be that they have one great thing in common, if you take it particularly from the Old Testament and from the everything that got left out of the Old Testament, in the fact that Lucifer's real crime was the fact that he wanted to be self-directing. He wanted to say, no, I'm going to choose whether or not I love the humans or not, and hold them in high esteem. I can't obey you on this because I think you're wrong. which the angels were not supposed to do. They weren't supposed to be self-directing. And that must have been really boring if we're gonna like credit the story with, you know, having some truth to it. That would be extremely boring. Can you imagine having a bunch of sycophants that followed you around all day singing hymns in your praise and agreeing with everything you said?
Presumably, that's why he created man.
Exactly. But you had Lucifer who wanted to be self-directing, and that's like, you know, something that you've a dog you've raised from a puppy suddenly turning around and biting you and saying, "I think you're an asshole," kind of thing. So possibly God overreacted with the whole, "Yes, I shall throw you into the pit" type thing. If you think about it, women were extremely constrained during the time when the nomadic tribes would have been passing on these oral tales. So it would have made sense for the gift for storytellers, a lot of them were extremely gifted storytellers as well, to insert a bit of sympathy between female characters when they did actually come up and between the adversary, because both of them wanted to be self-directing. And on an instinctual level, I think a storyteller would have picked that up. So that's my theory.
The other thing I'm interested about with, and this is something which has been pretty consistent with all of most modern interpretations of the devil is that, yeah, he's a trickster, but he always sticks to his word. In that, if he makes a deal, that's it. That he won't go back on his deal. And you see that in all sorts of things. You know, a deal with the devil, a deal with a demon. Yeah, they will try and trick you, but when it's done, they will hold themselves to it, and they have to hold themselves to it. And it makes me think there was obviously the modern, the recent Constantine series, but before that, there was a film with Keanu Reeves in it, which I quite liked. I quite liked it. And at the end of the film, Keanu Reeves, Constantine, kills himself so that the devil will come up to see him, because they always say that the devil himself would come to get Constantine. So the devil comes up to get Constantine, and Constantine says, "Okay, you can take me, but go into the other room. You're gonna find that your son is up to no good." So the devil does that, sorts that situation, comes back in. He says, "So what do you want? An extension?" Because he basically he Constantine has done him a favor, because his son was trying to usurp him. So the devil has to give something in return. And I quite like that, because it's a total contrast in the God myth. That never happens. You never give anything to God. It's never an exchange of that nature. You know, he can take and take and take, or he can give and give and give, but it's all under his grounds. Whereas with the devil, almost consistently, if you give something to the devil has to owes you something back, and he will always stick to his word. And I find that quite interesting.
Yeah, there is always a negotiation between demons. There's never a negotiation with gods. But in fact, the old gods, there is a bit of negotiating. But, you know, you're far more likely to get your fingers burnt. We need to get out the F jar because I'm going to say the F word, but doesn't it remind you of fairies?
For those who don't know what the F jar is, basically, someone told suggested to Jules that maybe she should get a jar, and I have to put a pound in every time I say the word fairies. I didn't agree with this because I don't have that much money in the world, but I'm glad you brought it up because that gives me an excuse to talk about it. Yes, fairies are very much the same thing, and if we think that actually the same mythos has fed into the Christian myth, as it were, it's very easy to see the similarities between fairies and demons, especially because many people believe that fairies were a kind of demons. And one of the myth, one of the theories behind what fairies were is that when God cast down Lucifer and the rebelling angels, more than just everyone started to fall out of heaven. And Michael said, you've got to close this hole in the sky, because otherwise there'll be no one left. And God went, yeah, all right, and closed it. And wherever the angels fell, that's where they then existed. So the angels that fell into the pit became demons, and the angels that fell onto the earth became fairies.
So, I mean, the whole sort of idea of an exchange, there must be balance, there must be nothing owing on either side. Which is why deals with demons are in myth so fiendishly difficult to get out of. We've obviously talked about Faust before, but I'm going to mention a book that I read when I was 13. My dad gave me a copy because I was literally scratching around the house looking for something to read and I had nothing. And I was up all night with this book. It's The Devil Rides Out by Denis Wheatley. Denis Wheatley wrote a lot of black magic, as in black magic satanic books. Not on how to practice Satanism, but based on quite meticulous research of the both the sort of more Wiccan covens of the time, the Alexandrian and Gardnerian witchcraft movements, and also actual Satanists practicing, and then added a little bit of sort of fantasy in with it as well. And it's and some Egyptian mythology. And it's a pretty scary book, or it is when you're 13 and it's the first time you've ever read anything like that, particularly when you're struggling with the whole am I Catholic thing or not as well.
Oh,
But this is a case of you never really absolutely see the devil in these books or any of the the lower archdukes of hell as they're called. But they are mentioned, you get the feeling of them, sometimes they're evoked or invoked within a person. Occasionally sort of the black imps turn up and things like that. And there's some quite scary stuff. The one in The Devil Rides Out was the goat of Mendes actually shows up, which sounds really bad, but it's that it's sometimes confused with the Baphomet. It is a huge black goat with bat's wings and four horns and traditional satanic type symbol.
Sorry, this has nothing to do with Lucifer, but quick tidbit about goats. It was believed that the goats were one of the other associations with the devil and Lucifer and stuff like that about goats, was that goats would whisper profanities into holy men's ears if they were trying to concentrate and stuff like that. So you just have, I don't know, Saint Patrick sitting on the hillside contemplating the beauty of creation, and you just see a goat slowly amble up to him, and he's there like, "No, no," and it just gets closer and closer and just leans into his ear and just whispers, "Penis." That's all I can think about is the fact that someone looked at a goat one day and said, "You know what? I bet if a holy man were here, it would lean across and whisper obscenities into his ear."
It's
It's one of
like
the most beautiful parts of old beliefs.
I think a lot of the there are a lot of animals that get bad press, like cats, wolves, owls to some extent, bats, snakes. In some cases, pigs, coyotes, that sort of thing. It depends where you are in the world, but a lot of them seem to be stem in the Western world, and the goat is definitely one of them because the goat was considered good eating back when the Bible was actually still in its oral transition phase.
And I mean, the other thing about is I think it's because of the eyes.
They've got letterbox eyes, haven't they? Little
Yeah,
oblong
I don't
pupils.
actually like goats very much,
I
and
do, they're so cute.
no, I don't like them.
And
It's not, I mean, just in general, I think a lot of the animals that we sort of thought, oh, they're not very good, is because of the eyes, because they did not have human-esque eyes, if that makes sense, in the shape.
yeah, I mean, you've got wolves which have oval pupils set on a slant, and cats with their elliptical pupils, and
Yeah, exactly. And I think that these things were seen as otherly, as it were, and that's in particular why they were associated with otherly things. They weren't human, if that makes sense.
I think perhaps the goat comes, it might be a Norse influence again, because weirdly enough, I know Thor's always shown as riding on a horse when we show him in traditional mythology, but actually he spent far more time driving around in his chariot, which was drawn by two goats.
I
And
remember that.
so I think that might be another sort of bit of transposition myth-wise. And certainly the wolf could very well have something to do with the whole Fenris Ulf myth, the day of Ragnarok and the wolf ushering in, the end of days. People, the wolves obviously were quite dangerous, but only if you ended up in their territory. So cats obviously were quite solitary, and then you have an old woman with a cat and it's like, you're a witch.
Thanks, guys.
So
Course, they were only a witch, if they up until that mo moment they were very helpful healer women, but the moment
anything goes wrong.
blame her. She's a witch.
Yeah. Do you know the really sad thing, though, is that they used to burn wolves at the stake and subject them to the same punishment as they did for witchcraft, as they did for these poor women accused of witchcraft.
I did not know that.
They did with cats as well, cats and wolves. And there was a punishment for witchcraft that involved nailing the woman to a bridge because, you know, the flowing water underneath should have carried away the evil in her soul. And they used to do the same thing with wolves, which is pretty horrendous when you think about it.
Yeah, that is. That's awful. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And that brings me on to this other point, which is another aspect of the devil, which I think people sort of another reason we start to see him in a slightly kinder light, is that how many deaths can we accredit to the devil in the Bible?
Two, possibly three.
Two, possibly three. How many deaths can we accredit to God in the Bible?
Around 6 million.
Okay, so
Not a bit more.
if not more. I mean, he wiped everybody out with Noah. That was a thing that happened.
There's that. There's Sodom and Gomorrah. There's also the slaying of all the firstborn in Egypt, you know, to
Yeah.
make a point.
Well, I mean, Pharaoh wouldn't let his people go, and
And this is aside from all the individual families that have been struck down here, there, and everywhere.
so yeah,
Like poor Job.
like poor Job, who really didn't deserve that. So I think that's another reason why people are a little bit more sympathetic with the devil now, is that he never actually really murdered anybody.
No, I think there are a couple of examples of where he may have led people into harm's way, but it was very much a choice thing.
Yeah.
It's always
I think he's
presented as a
definitely
choice.
tricked people into doing silly stuff, but then
Well, yeah, I mean, if you read any sort of accounts of Satanism or anything like that, and whether you put any credence in it at all, the psychological damage that you could do when you think you're putting yourself in the hands or claws of something like that, of some sort of demonic entity, would be absolutely sort of paralyzing, probably. The sort of things that people are willing to exchange their alleged soul for. It's really stupid. It is very much a case of, I will pay you Tuesday for a burger today. It's like, just give me 6 million now, and then you can have my soul when I die at 70 something. It is Faust all over again.
Yeah.
Okay, so other representations that are a bit more sympathetic. There is Horns by Joe Hill, which is an extremely good book, and I recommend it. The book is probably slightly better than the film, but the film is also well worth seeing. And it's brilliant. It's a case of the main character is really good, really genuinely decent. He's one of those people who, without seeming to have much effort, is just a good person. And then, rather like poor Job, everything gets taken away from him. And then he starts to grow horns. And then it's a case of, well, if he's not really the nice guy, then maybe he's. It's a case of he can't be one or he's got to be one or the other. And if he can't really be the good guy, then he will be the bad guy and he'll do it properly.
Yeah.
The entire town believes that he raped and murdered his girlfriend because she was breaking up with him. And he can't exactly remember what happened because he got really drunk that night, but he was sure he didn't murder her. And as it goes on, you find out who it actually was. And he sort of gains the path through growing these horns and becoming effectively the devil. He gains the power to sort of reveal the truth. It's a really good book. You have to just sort of follow the narrative as it goes. And I think it says some interesting stuff both about perceived goodness and genuine goodness and whether or not acting in a manner that will bring the truth out is not perhaps the best thing of all.
Yeah.
So.
Well, going back to the series Lucifer, one of the things he can do is he has a myriad of different powers. One of the things he can do is he can make people admit their deepest, darkest desires.
Yeah.
It's to me, it really highlights something, because it highlights the importance for him is that he sees into what people really are, beyond the sort of the facade that they put up. And we go back to what's his face, to
Job.
Job, thank you.
Yeah.
Go back to Job, where he was saying in his heart he can only do all these things, he can only be this good person because he has the opportunity to. But if you take away everything, he won't be anymore. And it's all about ripping away facades and revealing what people are really like underneath.
Yeah. I do want to mention one of my favorite, doesn't really contain the devil, but a lot of people read the character as the devil, and it's one of the best written antagonists of all time, in my opinion. It's The Stand by Stephen King. If you haven't read The Stand, the world 99.9%, no, 99.99% of the world population gets wiped out by a super flu created by the American government.
Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. This sort of massive amount of, I suppose, killing makes the time right for a certain sort of demonic entity, more like the adversary of the Old Testament, actually, to arrive. And he's been in places before. He's been involved with the Ku Klux Klan, he's been involved with the Black Panthers, and all the way back through history, he's sort of turned up when things have got really nasty. And it's Randall Flagg, and he's just so cheerful and chipper, and he looks really ordinary and acts really, quite jolly and polite, and he's got these very piercing blue eyes, and yet you look at him and you know there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Something really wrong with him. And ultimately his greatest strength and his greatest weakness are the same thing. It's he revels in destruction. He tries to remake the world in his image, but the problem is he is the great destroyer.
Hard to make stuff if you're constantly destroying it.
And the whole thing is that in order to make it in his image, he needs to stamp out the free will of the people who are left. Some people come to him willingly, and there are others who just, without really knowing why, fear him and want to stay away from him. And those tend to be the people who really don't want someone to say, tell them exactly what to do. They want to be able to make their own choices and to have a moral compass that they follow. So it's not a case of good people and bad people. There are good and bad people in both camps.
Yeah.
It's about whether you're lazy or whether you're not lazy. It's whether you're willing to do the mental, the mental gymnastics it takes to work through complicated moral issues. That's the crux of it, I think. But he's great, and a lot of people read him as the devil, and I suppose in a way he sort of is, but
It's interesting because Stephen King actually kind of creates the devil several times in his work without actually ever making it the devil. For instance, I'm reading Salem's Lot at the moment, and in Salem's Lot, it's basically Dracula, if we're honest. That's exactly what it is. But but it feels like the devil. And the thing about Stephen King is the way he writes things. The true evil he always creates is men. They're always kind of, he never actually uses the devil, but there's this concept that people are the devil. People are evil, actually. And evil people are the ones who really should be feared, not the supernatural. And you see that happen all the time. The other one is, I think it's The Mist, where these bunch of people all get stuck in a supermarket with all these creatures coming out. But actually, the thing that there ultimately was the scariest part was the crazy religious woman who kind of turns them all against each other.
There are some people who are short-sighted enough that they just want their moment of power. And the worst ones are the ones who actually believe their own rhetoric. Another Stephen King one, I've literally just finished reading it actually, is Doctor Sleep, which is the second in, it's not really ever intended to be a series, but it's like a follow-on book from The Shining, and it's really interesting. There is the True Knot, which are, they're sort of like psychic vampires, if you like. They don't really age, and they go around the country preying on psychic children, torturing them to get this sort of psychic ability up to its full strength, and then feeding on them, and then obviously disposing of the remains.
Of course.
And again, they look really innocuous, they fit in. The leader, Rose, female demon this time, female devil, known as Rose the Hat because she wears a very old-fashioned top hat for some reason. It's great. It's the little details. It is the devil in details that makes Stephen King so great. Danny has his own demons to fight because Danny, unfortunately, has followed his father in becoming an alcoholic. And it's an interesting journey between the two. But the sort of humans that Rose ends up recruiting are the ones who've quite often had a lot of evil done to them and have become evil and less than human because of it. It's not a case of everything is down to what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a case of everything is down to what happened to them and the fact that they then chose not to be human afterwards, way
yeah.
before she changes them into anything else. You know, they just decide to see nothing but the evil in mankind, if you like.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. So again, the real villains are the humans again, and the real heroes are the humans as well.
It's a really interesting thing. And I really appreciate stories where actually people are the devil. People are the personification of the devil. And you see it happen quite a lot. And it was referenced in Daredevil, actually, obviously. he takes on this personification of the devil. Obviously, it's because he's a the Daredevil word. He takes on this personification of the devil in that he's punishing these criminals. And there's this one scene where he's talking to the priest because he's trying to figure out whether what he's doing is right or not. And he asks the priest if the priest has ever seen the devil. And the priest says that yes, he has. And he saw it the day he met a really, really kind of holy man. And then an evil man came and killed this holy man after listening to him talk. And they had a whole conversation. And I really appreciated that. Because to me, I don't know why I really like that so much, but I do. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. On a completely different interpretation, have you ever seen The Exorcist?
No, I'd never. That would scare me way too much.
When it was re-released, many years ago now, when it was re-released, and they re-released it with about 40 minutes of footage cut out of it, so actually the story didn't make a lot of sense.
Why because did you do that?
Because it was still, it had been banned for quite a long time, and there were still parts of it where, in order to make it an 18, they had to cut out this amount of footage. This was back in the 90s, so I did go and see it, and I did read the book, and yeah, there is something very chilling about the film.
But what about the Omen?
Yeah, quite like that. That's slightly different set of myths, isn't it? That's the coming of the Antichrist.
Yeah, but he's the son of the devil, isn't he? Am I making that up?
No. In theory, in the same way that Jesus Christ was supposedly the son of God, so would have been produced by a mortal woman.
Yeah.
And that's where you get films like Rosemary's Baby and all sorts as well. I watch these old cheesy horror films.
I've never heard of that one. What is that about?
It's a woman who thinks she's being haunted and she's trying to get pregnant, actually. And she keeps having these dreams about rituals being done to her and a demon sleeping with her. And she's constantly being told that, you know, that's not what happened. And then she finds she's pregnant. She goes through the pregnancy. And then she realises, as she's about to give birth, that actually all those things had actually happened. And it's something, you never really see it, it's something demonic she gives birth to, something evil that will usher in a different era, because there are all these insane priests that her husband has something to do with. Because, you know, great husband.
Thanks.
Use my wife as your renter womb, that's fine.
That's the one thing I don't get, is the all these series where, like, you see these people and they're trying to usher in the end of the world. I'm like, why? the kind of the devil that they're describing, I'm like, why on earth do you think that he's going to give you any favours? For real?
Well, the end of any world is the beginning of a new one, isn't it?
Yeah, but
it might be the beginning of a world of bare rock and no oxygen, but they're obviously gambling. It's Faust again. We will be kings and princes in the new world.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the two interpretations of the devil we see now, is that we just see the devil who doesn't care about humans and will happily use them and then destroy them in the same breath. And then we see the devil, which is kind of a little bit more apathetic to humans. He doesn't really have time for people who don't, who are hiding themselves, but isn't ultimately actually after world domination or anything like that.
Yeah. Oh, here's a weird one. Did you ever read The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis? It's quite an old book now.
No, I did not.
It's letters from a senior demon to a younger demon on how to corrupt the hearts of man.
Oh.
It's really interesting. I wouldn't say entertaining is the right word, interesting. And basically, in the end, the young demon fails, and the implication is that Screwtape, the senior demon, is going to actually kill and eat the younger demon for failing, because the younger demon, the more he associates with humans and the more he gets to know them, the less harm he wants to do. So he stops tricking them, he stops being, he stops driving them into temptation's way, things like that, and starts not quite helping them, but sort of steering them in the other direction.
I
It is very, very interesting.
think because I imagine we're probably going to have to call the episode soon. There is one interpretation of Lucifer that we haven't spoken of that I feel that we kind of probably need to, and that's Lucifer from Supernatural.
Yeah.
Now he surprised everyone because everyone was he's a bad character. He wants to bring about the apocalypse. He really doesn't care about people. He's quite violent. And yet, at the same time, he's a bit of a fan favorite, probably because of the actor, probably because he's quite sarcastic, and a little bit playful. But there were things that people really liked about him, which is that they never really liked any of the other angels, because the other angels really weren't very nice either. And Lucifer was always kind of honest about what he wanted and what he was doing. You know,
Yeah.
he never tried to. I don't know. There's all sorts of theories behind it, but interestingly enough, you know, Lucifer was not a good guy. But all the worst things Lucifer really did to Sam and stuff like that, you know, when he was hurting him and stuff like along those lines or in the cage, he did in rage, or it was all in Sam's head, you know. So when Lucifer and Michael were caught up in the cage with Sam Winchester, they did all sorts of horrible things to Sam Winchester, which doesn't surprise me because he did get them locked up in a cage. So,
Yeah, together and they hate each
together.
other.
And Adam as well. Adam was there, but no one remembers him, so whatever. But yeah, so in the most recent series, though, Lucifer has come back. And he's kind of sided with the Winchesters in the same way that Crowley kind of occasionally sides with the Winchesters, but is never really on their side, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of really is on their side because there's a bit of a relationship there. So I don't know. It's the fact that when they were writing Lucifer, they didn't. I don't think the writers intended for us to like him that much, and yet we did. We kind of he was he became a real fan favorite. And again, if we think that the majority of fans who watch Supernatural are young women, it's quite telling.
Yeah.
And it's another instance where I don't think Lucifer at any point is rapey, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not in the same way that a lot of male sort of villains often are. You know, we had this discussion about the archetype of making the male villain kind of dominant in a really kind of unpleasant way with women. And that never really happens with Lucifer. He's just kind of generally not a good person.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that makes him more acceptable. So, yeah, interesting one there.
Yeah, definitely. The whole concept from being, if you like, a personification of the potential for evil in all of us from biblical sources to something that was clearly an external force that would make you do things if you weren't careful and was literally used by certain religions in a very patriarchal, controlling way to make you behave and toe the line, to something a little bit more sympathetic. And to ultimately now being, as you say, a fan favourite is a quite an interesting journey.
Never thought I'd see the day where I'd say, I kind of like Lucifer. Kind of like Lucifer, especially after watching Lucifer. I really like the series and I like his interpretation. He's an interesting character. So there you go. That's Lucifer. Devil's in the detail.
So, anyone with any thoughts on what we've said or any own, if their own theories, we'd love to hear them.
We would like to point out at this point, we did not intend, if anybody has been offended by this podcast, with no offense intended. We are just talking about Lucifer in the context of fiction. If you happen to believe in him, then okay. But that's not what we're talking about, so
Okay, and that's it. We should probably wrap it up for this week.
All right, then. We'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.